As promised, we are joined right now by a national NBA writer for the Los Angeles Times. He was a panelist on our daily TV show back in the day. He is a friend of this program. He is Dan Wojcicki. Dan, it's good to have you back. How you doing, Dan?
Hey, Jim. I've been busy the last day or so, but happy to be on the show.
I would imagine. Listen, I appreciate that. I know how busy you are. Thanks for making time for this show. You're in the bubble as we speak. I want to get into the events of the last 24 hours, but before we do, can you describe the mood and the emotions inside the bubble right now?
You know, in talking to people, I think, you know, there's still some uneasiness about all of this, Jim. It's, you know, I just got here, right? So I've been here only a few days. I'm here through the end, and I didn't know, or, you know, yesterday if that meant I'd be gone by the weekend or if I'll be here till the middle of October. But I think, you know, there's uneasiness because I think, look, players, when players committed to this, they committed to a lot of sacrifices, right? They committed to isolation. They committed to strict rules. They committed to, I mean, these are people that are used to having life be lived a very, very certain way. And that changed, obviously. You know, they committed to not seeing their families and friends. And I think part of the reason they did that was obviously to save the season, to continue to make money on their contracts. But you know, another part of it was, you know, there was an opportunity and I think a duty felt by a lot of players to, with sort of the eyes of the world on them, that they could speak out about issues they thought were important. And as games have gotten, Jim, more meaningful here, I think those messages have gotten more lost. You know, we've spent more time talking about, you know, Luka and how transcendent he's been, or the amazing, you know, Damian Lillard sort of performances, or the job Monty Williams did and all that stuff. And, you know, we spent less time talking about things like Jerian Grant spending an entire interview, you know, talking about Breonna Taylor, or players, you know, pressuring people to get involved in voting. And different things like that. Like, those messages were starting to fade. And I think the combination of sort of fatigue from the bubble, Jim, and sort of, you know, obviously the events in the real world, the non-bubble world, combined, I think players sort of were exhausted and had enough. And that's kind of what put us where we are now. And I think there's a sense that, you know, the games are only going to get more important from here. And they could, this could happen again.
I think the point you make, Dan, is really, really interesting, that as the play ramps up and the stakes get higher and higher, the message is getting diluted, if not lost altogether. Mm-hmm. And then you have LeBron James and Kawhi Leonard, and they're two of the players who spoke at the meeting last night. They were adamant, reportedly, that they did not want to continue playing because they do want change. Knowing, Dan, what you know about each of those players, what does that say about them?
Well, I mean, look, I think both of these guys are very calculated people in very different ways. And I think, look, right, like, the players have tremendous leverage right now. Ownership needs this season to continue. They're staring a very bleak financial future in the face in terms of, you know, what the 2020-2021 season is going to look like. You know, we don't know when fans are going to be able to be back safely in arenas. That is a massive revenue stream for teams, especially teams that own their own buildings. You're talking about parking and concessions and different things like that. All of these revenue streams have dried up. And so their one revenue stream is television, Jim. And if you don't deliver, you know this, if you agree to deliver a product and you don't do it, you're going to have to give it to them sometime, you know, or you're going to have to give the money back. And so I think, you know, players know this, and players know that they can leverage that. And so they've gotten ownership to commit, you know, hundreds of million of dollars over the next 10 years to black owned businesses and black communities. And they've gotten owners to commit to better hiring practices, which is something I think the league desperately needs. But, you know, I think there's an opportunity to do more. And one of the things that I'd be curious to see if players can do is look, the access to change oftentimes in this country, Jim, comes through power. And there are 30 super powerful people that were on a conference call today. They're the league's owners. They have very powerful friends. They have access to very powerful people extending all the way to the president. They have access to very powerful people on both sides of the political aisle, they have access to try to institute change and to try to put pressure on people. And I wonder if that's if something that the players will do, is that if they can get ownership to do things very, you know, to lean on the people that they know. I think one of the things that happened yesterday, they got kind of lost in all of this stuff because it was such a salacious thing, Jim, was, you know, when the Milwaukee Bucks didn't leave the locker room, you know, what they did, and it, this might not seem like a major thing, but to me it's like it's concrete, is, you know, they spent time on the phone with members of the Wisconsin state government. And one of the things they landed on is a call for the state legislature in Wisconsin to resume to discuss a bill that deals with police reform. You know, just getting, and that was met with positive responses from people like the Wisconsin governor. And just like something as simple as that, you know, to me shows that players in a short amount of time can take something from ground zero and build it and do something with it. And I think that to me is going to be imperative in the next step in terms of activism in this league.
Dan Wojcicki writes for the LA Times. Dan, I agree with everything you just said. In fact, I made a couple of those points earlier. I think that when people say, what can the owners really do? How much more can they do? They can do a hell of a lot. They are 30 of the wealthiest, most powerful people in the entire country.
Sure.
They certainly can do more. And the point that you made about the Milwaukee Bucks, I also made that point that many people say, really, well, what's going on in there? What are they doing? Well, they're talking to legislators. They are doing something practical. Let me ask you this, Dan. I mean, certainly there is solidarity, but is there unanimity among the players? In other words, could you see individual players leaving the bubble at this point, or does that feel unlikely?
Yeah. You know, I think it could happen, certainly. And I think especially in the last 36 hours, you know, in conversations with people, maybe it's even seemed likely. But I do think, again, right, like at the core of a lot of this stuff is that these are guys that have spent an entire year as part of teams. And again, as the games take on more continued importance, like, you know, these are guys that have put in a lot of work to get to this point. They've put in a lot of work to compete, to try to win a championship. And while it's not the most important thing, that doesn't mean it's still not important. And so I do think you'll see people stay who want to leave, you know, and they'll do so for their teammates, and they'll do so for the opportunity to kind of finish what they started this year. I was thinking back to when I covered the Clippers and kind of dealt through the Donald Sterling saga. I remember a conversation I had with Blake Griffin just sort of about, actually about Donald Sterling and sort of like the team's relationship with this person who wasn't really around. And one of the things that Blake said to me that's always stuck with me, he said, you know, I've never once sat in this locker room before a game, laced up my shoes and thought to myself, I'm going to go do this for Donald Sterling. Right? Like that was never on his mind. And I think, in a way, that sort of applies to this, is that, you know, these are guys that are very motivated to do this for themselves and to do this for their teammates. And I do think that, you know, that's what's tricky about this, is we're not talking about some shadowy evil figure like Donald Sterling. We're talking about, you know, hundreds of years of systemic problems that are hard and complicated to solve. And so I think that guys are very conflicted on these two things. But ultimately, I think most will stay and compete.
We're talking to Dan Wojcicki, who writes for the LA Times. Dan, let me quickly follow up on that point. Like that point you made about Blake Griffin saying, I never once thought that I was playing or doing this for Donald Sterling. You know, he's doing it for himself. He's doing it for his teammates. And the point you also make that, look, there are guys who want to leave, but they've paid a significant price in terms of the time they put in. They've been at it for a year. It's all really interesting and true. However, then you think about Paul George, right? And the fact that he was talking about the psychological toll that being in the bubble has taken on him. I have to think he's not the only one. I have to think it's impacting a lot of other guys as well. I mean, you haven't been there the entire time, but can you lay it out? What's it like to be away from loved ones, even for a short time, and especially during this time?
Well, I mean, I can even just say, like, in terms of this. So, you know, as where I'm at right now, as I get prepared to sort of enter, like, the secret layer of the bubble, which is where I will be in a few weeks once I clear an extended quarantine, you know, just to even get here to go into the arena to sit in the upper deck and witness a game, I had to do about 36 hours of isolation. You know, once I arrived in Orlando, I have a young son, Jim, you know, I have a beautifully handsome dog, you know, named after B. Arthur. I know how much you love Mr. B.
I do know this.
And so like having to leave these people, and also my wife, I love her very much too. I don't want to forget her. you know, having to leave these people and be here and then be told that you can't go anywhere, like, even for 36 hours, like, go a little crazy. I had all this time to do stuff, but I was sort of paralyzed by the freedom of it all. And I think, like, take Paul George, for instance, right? Like, he's in a situation where he has no family, no friends around or anything like that, just has teammates. He's struggling on the court. They've been here for a long time. It's fatigued. They know they, like, for them, they can feel pretty confident that they've got a long time to go. And, like, I don't know, like, one of the only things you have is your phone, right? And it's pretty easy to see on Twitter how people felt about Paul George, you know, early in the series. And yeah, I mean, I think that can absolutely to you know, people feeling depressed and anxious. I could totally see that. I've seen it with my friends that have gone through the week-long quarantine. I've seen it with reporters that have been in, like, that first tier of the bubble that have been there since mid-July. Like, this is difficult. Like, you have like, this isn't going on a road trip. This is moving, you know? Like, that's what this is. This is uprooting your life and moving somewhere that, you know, and moving into a place where you're very restricted. And, yeah, I mean, look, this is, in the grand scheme of things, it's, you know, the amenities are great, and it's Florida, and it's, you know, it's nice enough and all of that stuff, but you don't have the people that you love, especially, and you don't have them at the times you need them. Like, yesterday was a very stressful day, and I would have done anything to have picked up my son to hold him, because he's the world's greatest perspective. And I couldn't do that. I had to see him on FaceTime for a few minutes before going back to work, and that stunk. You know, I'm lucky to have a job. I'm lucky to be here. But, you know, last night it would have been really great to be with family. And if I'm feeling that after 4 days, I can only imagine how guys are feeling after, you know, 8 weeks.
That is exceptionally well said. A national NBA writer for the Los Angeles Times. Once again, a panelist on our daily TV show back in the day. Another good friend of the program. Dan, great job. Really appreciate you. Great perspective. And always nice to have you on this show. Thanks for making time, Dan. I know you're busy.
Happy to do it, Jim. Let's catch up in a couple weeks.
Would love to, Dan. Great job. I'm proud of you. Well done. Dan Wojcicki with another perspective. And he's inside the bubble. I think that is amazing what he just said. The way he laid out how he's feeling after only a few days.